And if this feels confusing, it is not you. This is confusing. This is the system. There's all these different pieces, and it feels like mom and dad are fighting, and now we don't know where the plates are. Welcome to this week's episode of the Rolling Forward podcast.
I'm Dr. Alicia Rowland.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Rowland.
I'm a pediatrician.
I'm a psychiatrist.
And we are both part-time clinicians and part-time researchers.
And we like to host this podcast as a way of demystifying some of the health news and headlines. It can get really confusing out there, especially now. And so we're trying to just, I don't know, make it easier? Make it simpler? We're
trying to break down a very obtuse and difficult non-functioning healthcare system into small bite-sized pieces so that you can understand what these rapidly changing executive orders, laws, tweets from government officials mean for you and your family.
So this week we're going to be diving into the patchwork that has become vaccine coverage. We're going to be talking about what's changed with vaccines, specifically around the COVID-19 shot, what some parents are running into, how states are responding, how the federal government is responding, and then what you can do now for your family.
So let's get started.
This conversation came up, Alicia, because I called you a few days ago that one of my friends who lives in Florida brought her kids to the pharmacy to get their annual shots, you know, the way that we do it. You go, you get your flu, you get your COVID, anything that you're due for, you can get at your pharmacy if you don't want to wait to go into your pediatrician for an appointment. And she found out that one of her children wasn't eligible.
What?
And she had taken her child to the pharmacy to get vaccinated in the past. And so she wasn't expecting this at all, and her older kids were able to, but her youngest kid wasn't able to get the COVID vaccine. And the pharmacy said that this was because of new federal rules, and she was confused, reached out to me, and I reached out to you. So, Alicia, what is going on?
So a lot has changed for this winter's respiratory season. The FDA has pulled the emergency authorization for COVID shots in August.
And let's be clear, it says emergency authorization, but this had been in place since the initial COVID-19 vaccines were approved back in 2020, right?
Yes. And this might have come as a little bit of a surprise, because while the first emergency use authorization was approved in December 2020, the public health emergency ended actually in May 2023. But most of these emergency use authorizations for the COVID-19 vaccines had extended and were still in existence.
I remember December 2020. I was on the front lines treating COVID in New York City, and I was one of the first people vaccinated because we were regularly exposed to COVID every day as part of the work that I was doing.
I got my first vaccine Christmas Eve, and I cried.
I remember that. I was so grateful that you had that level of protection. And at that time, those were under emergency use authorizations, but the COVID-19 vaccine has continued under emergency use authorizations just because this is just sometimes how vaccines are approved in America. But one of the issues is that the pediatric groups have broken with federal policy. So while federal policy is saying, hey, healthy kids under 5 don't need this anymore, the American Academy of Pediatrics is recommending COVID vaccine for kids between 6 to 23 months of age, and then risk-based vaccinations for older kids.
This was also endorsed by the American Academy of Family Physicians.
So now parents are kind of getting these contradictory signals from FDA, HHS, that this emergency use authorization is removed, but then the professional societies are still recommending it. So what's happening is that parents are running into the issue of actually being able to get a COVID-19 vaccine for their child who is under 5.
I feel like this is the running theme of our podcast of parents getting conflicting information from healthcare professionals and from the federal government.
And then they don't know what to do. So people like my friend are going into the pharmacy expecting to be able to get the COVID vaccine the way that they always have, and now they can't get it anymore.
This isn't only limiting access in terms of who pharmacies will vaccinate. Parents are running into all sorts of things with regards to the COVID vaccine for their kids.
You're so right, because there's changes in how physicians or pharmacies are ordering these. There's changes in how insurances are reimbursing them. Do you need a prior authorization? Do you need a prescription to get it? Instead of just being able to walk into the pharmacy and get a vaccine the way that my friend was used to being able to do in the past, there's a lot of new steps to navigate.
And there are lots of ways that states and cities and places are responding to this. In fact, cities like Boston are launching free clinics to fill the gaps, to be able to provide vaccines to this population that the government may not recommend or may not cover, but the professional societies are recommending.
And geographic areas are coming together to form health committees in the wake of these contradicting guidelines from professional societies and the federal government. For example, California, Oregon, Washington, and Hawaii have formed the West Coast Health Alliance, which they say is to uphold scientific integrity, and they plan to issue unified evidence-based vaccine guidance.
Similarly, some of the Northeastern states have formed the Northeast Public Health Collaborative, and they are going to make their own vaccine recommendations in response to these federal limits. Pennsylvania has already publicly aligned and told residents of the state to follow state-approved medical organizations like the AAP over the shifting federal guidance.
And individual states like Illinois, they're taking their own action as well, directing their health departments to issue state-specific vaccine protocols and standing orders so that providers, including pharmacists, can keep vaccinating kids under the authority of the state despite these federal policy. This all just sounds like a big mess.
It actually sounds like a lot what we've been talking about episode by episode, that we're giving states more power to make decisions about healthcare. And so your state might protect access to vaccines and your state might make it more difficult. It's created this patchwork where there's 50 different ways or 50 different types of access to vaccines for kids.
And these coalitions are states, they are trying to stabilize the access, but if you don't live in one of these areas, now your local laws might be even stricter. And like you say, this is the patchwork where your zip code is determining what can happen. And these changes are really coming from the fact that HHS and professional societies are no longer in agreement. In the past, professional societies and HHS were in agreement. And as they've split and states are trying to fill this gap in coming up with these state-specific coalitions and guidance and so forth, how is the federal government responding to this?
Oh, well, if you go on the very, 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 very scientific and professional website X, which is where the federal government provides all their information currently.
Oh, no.
RFK Jr. has tweeted that, quote, AAP should be candid with doctors and hospitals that recommendations that diverge from the CDC's official list are not shielded from liability under the 1986 Vaccine Injury Act.
So basically, since the 1980s, the United States has used a vaccine injury compensation program to compensate rare injury vaccines, and this also gives manufacturers some amount of liability protections, which encourages people to stay in the market. And RFK Jr. has targeted this vaccine injury compensation program for overhaul, and is even considering adding certain symptoms of autism to the injury table, despite the fact that this vaccine autism relationship was a hoax, which we get into in our earlier episode, the vaccine autism hoax origin story.
And there's a lot of concerns about this. If the list of injuries that can be compensated is broadened too widely, especially to conditions that are weak or are disputed in the medical community, it could dramatically increase the number of claims. And there's fear that this could essentially bankrupt the program and that no one would get any benefit. There's also concerns that removing some protection from manufacturers will make it less likely that companies will focus on manufacturing vaccines.
And this came up in our earlier episode about Tylenol and autism, because although the federal government has now released a report saying that they believe that there's a link between Tylenol exposure and autism development, when this went to court, those cases were dismissed because there was no scientific evidence. And so this is showing a divergence between what the federal government is saying is evidence and what has been considered as evidence in the courts.
And in science.
And in science. So, Alicia, this is all part of this broader, rapid rewrite of vaccine policy. you know, where the CDC's vaccine panel, ACIP, has been totally overhauled. There's been policy shifts that are announced. It's not aligned with the science, and this is really fueling all of these different moves that we're seeing. So what can parents do to navigate this?
Call your pediatrician first. They'll know the current age, the criteria, the supply. They should understand the state's standing orders. And lots of times, they keep vaccines available in their office.
And that's where we started for my family. I called my daughter's pediatrician this week. We went right in, and she got all the shots that she needed. So, like Alicia says, start with your own family's physician.
You want to book early and verify twice. So, like, measure twice, cut once.
So if your child's eligible today, schedule now and then confirm again 24 hours before the appointment, because policies and inventories may shift. And so you don't want to take your whole family to someplace and then it's going to turn out to not be available.
Don't let the logistics about receiving the COVID vaccine delay getting a flu vaccine.
That is so true, because I remember us talking about this earlier. The 2024 to 2025 flu season was particularly severe among children.
And you don't have to wait. You can get the flu vaccine today. And if the COVID vaccine is available tomorrow, you can get it tomorrow.
And this is a change from before, where some amount of waiting was recommended. So point is, get all of the vaccines, including the flu vaccine, that you're eligible and appropriate for after a conversation with your doctor. Don't delay so that you get the COVID at the same time, and get the COVID shot if it's appropriate for you and your family as soon as you're able to.
If you're having trouble at your pediatrician's office accessing the vaccine, or at your local pharmacy accessing the vaccine, but you are interested in getting the COVID shot for your kids, reach out to your local health department, your city, your state, your county department of health.
And you can also reach out to your AAP or American Academy of Pediatrics state chapter and see if they have any recommendations, because the American Academy of Pediatrics is recommending the COVID shot for children between 6 and 23 months. So if this is something that you're looking for help with, reach out to them and ask them for assistance.
Because the reality is that a lot of cities are running their own clinics in order to ensure that young children can be vaccinated for COVID. And maybe there's one in a town near you.
And if this feels confusing, it is not you. This is confusing. This is the system. There's all these different pieces, and it feels like mom and dad are fighting, and now we don't know where the plates are.
It's particularly confusing when you live in a place like DC that has DC laws. There's Maryland, that's 5 minutes away. Virginia is 10 minutes away. And they all have different processes, different laws, different access. And so if you live on a bordering state, it can be particularly confusing.
Or if you're a local city, your county and your state health departments maybe all don't agree, you might be getting some really different messages in that same way. So what we will say is your pediatrician is going to be your best compass, and then also reaching out to your local health authorities.
And we'll keep tracking changes so that you can spend less time decoding the rules and more time keeping your kids healthy.
And reach out to us if you've had any experiences with this, because we'd love to hear from you what it's been like when you're trying to bring your kids in, and what sorts of messages you're hearing. So you can reach out to us. We're at Roland Forward Show. That's R-O-L-I-N Forward Show at gmail.com.
And we're on socials, TikTok, Blue Sky, X.
And if we get any questions by email, we'll be answering them on our socials. So please follow us there.
And that's it for today. I'm Dr. Lisa Roland.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Roland.
Until next week.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Rolling forward, Dr. Sister Science Facts. I can't believe that you brought chips over, because it's like
crunch, 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 crunch.
They're so good, but can you imagine if we were eating them the entire time? Oh, okay. Put the chips away and let's get started.